Hey, it's Becca.
It's Nancy.
It's Brixie.
And this is
Insane Investigations.
Hey, investigators.
Today we're going to be covering the Appalachian Mountains and the urban legends connected to the area.
You can pronounce it in three different ways. So you can pronounce it Appalachian, Appalachian, and Appalachian. So we'll probably just do it by
whatever way it comes out.
You might get all three.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
So Appalachian Mountains are over 250 million years old, making them one of the oldest mountain ranges in the world. They stretch across 423 counties across 13 states in the US, and they're home to around 6.3 million residents. The highest point of the Appalachians is at Mount Mitchell in North Carolina, which is 2,037 meters or 6,684 feet tall.
There are many mountain ranges within the Appalachians. Some of the most famous ones are the Chic-Chocs, Notre Dame, Catskill Mountains, the Poconos, Blue Ridge, and the Great Smoky Mountains. Because the Appalachians are so big, they're split into three different regions. So the northern would be Newfoundland, Canada, all the way up to the Hudson River. The central then is from the Hudson to New River in West Virginia. And then the southern is from New River southward, so not very complicated. Along with being home to some of the most famous mountain ranges in the US, underneath the Appalachians is just as interesting. It turns out that the constant water flow, weak acids, and soft limestone lying beneath them has formed multiple caves within the mountains. So if you actually go hiking in the Appalachians, there's like loads of just random caves that like go underground and shit.
Oh, that's cool. Nice.
And they're just formed naturally.
It's a nice, but I did that one day, caving, and oh my god, the bruises that I had afterwards.
Yeah.
It's not fun.
I went into...
It's dark.
Like, I don't know, some caves in Ireland, Durham Caves or Durnham Caves, I can't remember, but I'm claustrophobic, so I got like halfway through them and I couldn't wait to get out, and it was like long. I was in there for like an hour. I was like, get me out. So I'll probably never go into another cave again in my life. Yeah. But they're cool though.
As we mentioned earlier, the Appalachians are over 250 million years old, which we all know is old, but when you actually think of the other things that Appalachians are older than, it's a bit wild. So they are actually older than the rings of Saturn.
Which is mad.
That's so
weird.
Which
is crazy.
Yeah.
All of the oceans, trees, just trees.
Trees. Like how?
Dinosaurs, limestone, and bones.
Older than bones.
Older than life.
Basically, yeah.
So I think the first question that comes to everyone's mind when you hear some of the stuff they are older than is, well, where did they come from? The Appalachians were formed when all of the continents merged together to create Pangaea. As the Laptis Ocean closed, Baltica and North America merged, effectively creating the Northern Appalachians. When Pangaea formed, it took up a third of the Earth, leaving one massive ocean called Panthalassa.
There's hiking trails in the Appalachians, but there is one that travels from one end of Appalachia to the other. And this trail is called the Appalachian Trail, and it's roughly 2,190 miles or 3,540 kilometers, which is big. Like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
The trail was created by Benton McKay in the 1920s as a means to connect people with nature, and completed in 1937, the trail winds through national parks, forests, and protected lands, offering hikers a journey through woodlands, rocky cliffs, and valleys.
The first people to live in the Appalachians were Native Americans around 16,000 years ago. These Native American tribes built the foundations of the Cherokee, Iroquois, Powhatan, and Shawnee cultures that still linger in the mountains today. The caves we mentioned earlier show that rather sizable populations of Native Americans lived in areas of Kentucky and Alabama from at least 6,000 BCE on. I'm not a historian, so I have no idea what that means, but it was a long time ago. The Hopewell influence was huge in Appalachia, and it was basically a culture of mound builders, but it quickly declined due to warfare between tribes. By the mid-17th century, the Cherokee controlled the majority of southern Appalachia, where the northern part was largely controlled by Algonquin tribes and the Iroquois Confederacy. It's believed that all of the tribes that originated in the Appalachians thrived due to the altitude of their homes, and the thought is that being so high up protected them from illness and disease that came from lands closer to sea level.
European settlers, particularly Scotch-Irish, moved to the region in the 18th century. At the time, the majority of the Appalachians were ruled by the Cherokee people, but all of the tribes still remained. There didn't seem to be much of an issue initially when the Scotch-Irish arrived, as the tribes were opened up to more business by selling furs and other natural resources. After Europeans arrived and the Spanish expedition was successful, the population in Appalachia just grew and grew. The census in 1790 recorded around 15,000 enslaved people alongside European settlers.
The Appalachians are famous for their moonshine, and if you don't know what moonshine is, it's an illegally distilled alcohol mostly made back when alcohol was illegal, and the term moon comes from the fact that many people made alcohol at night to avoid being caught. It's usually clear coloured whiskey and is made at home from a corn base. It's usually very high in alcohol content as it's unregulated, and in the early 1900s, the majority of moonshine made in the States came from the Appalachian Mountains. Of course, it had been brought over there by the Irish and Scottish immigrants.
Of course.
Just
trust the Celts to make sure that there's drink where they arrive.
I believe it. Moonshine was being made in Appalachia before Prohibition, so back then the only difference between these men known as moonshiners and legal distillers of liquor was that the moonshiners chose not to license their distilling operations or pay taxes on the product. When Prohibition came, moonshine only became more popular. But as we said earlier, it was unregulated, so it wasn't uncommon for batches of moonshine to be liquid poison created in stills that were made with repurposed car parts.
Like oil and shit.
Okay. Batches of moonshine would often have traces of antifreeze and gasoline, as well as other toxins like paint thinner and embalming fluid.
Yeah.
But why would you be drinking this stuff?
Oh, I suppose during Prohibition, if you really need a drink, that's all that you've got.
Yeah, it's like prison wine.
Drinking a bad batch of moonshine could result in extreme sickness, leading to blindness, paralysis, or even death. Which, to be honest, I mean, considering the stuff that was in it, I'm not really surprised.
No.
Yeah.
A common test of moonshine quality would be to light a little of the product on fire, with a blue flame meaning it was safe to drink, and yellow equaling tainted product. The ATF, which is the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco and Firearms, destroyed 3,909 moonshine stills and made 1,669 arrests during the 13 years of Prohibition in just Virginia County. In the decades following Prohibition, the demand for moonshine declined, and there are still illegal moonshine operations around Appalachia. People can now legally buy a bottle of White Lightning without having to worry about sipping on potential poison.
White Lightning, that's a brand of like cider. I remember.
Is it?
Yeah, it is in the UK anyway. White Lightning was what you drink down a park, you know, when you get your oldest looking mate to go into the shop. And hope they don't get ID'd. You all knew which was the dodgy shop that didn't ask for ID. And a bottle of White Lightning.
So, as we said earlier, a lot of the Appalachian Mountains were inhabited by Cherokee people. There are many Cherokee legends and tales that originated in Appalachia, and it would be impossible to cover them all in one episode, but we're going to touch on some of the interesting ones today. And you can let us know if you like them. We can always do an episode on different ones if it's something that people are interested in. One thing that I thought was quite interesting was the moon-eyed people. So in Cherokee folklore, the moon-eyed people live deep in the woods of what is now North Carolina and Georgia. The story goes that these pale-skinned, blue-eyed creatures were so sensitive to light that they only came out at nighttime. Unlike other mythical creatures, they weren't spirits or monsters, but they were actually human. Some suspect that Cherokee stories about these mysterious beings may be rooted in historical fact. Some even suspect that the Moon-Eyed people were descendants of Welsh settlers who arrived centuries before Christopher Columbus. These stories started floating around in the 18th century, which is also when European settlers started appearing in Appalachia. So there have been sightings of Moon-Eyed people in recent years in Georgia, and some people believe that certain sites of Appalachia are proof of Moon-Eyed people. An example is a wall in Georgia that's 900 feet long, 7 feet tall, and 12 feet thick. That's some fucking wall.
Yeah, that's some wall.
Apparently, it's almost identical to walls built in European battles, so many people think that the European settlers built it. Others believe that it was Moon-Eyed people who built it for protection against the Cherokee ancestors. One theory on who the Moon-Eyed people are were two Welsh princes who allegedly travelled to Appalachia in the 15th century. I did read a little bit on that story, and basically, like, they went there, explored, and then brought over a load of settlers. So the theory is that they were just European people who are just a little bit paler.
Yeah,
and they were like, oh my god, it's a monster.
I get that. Yeah, they would look a bit weird.
And there is some drawings that we'll put into the Instagram and Facebook, but it literally just looks like people with like really round eyes.
The Fugate family originated in France, but moved to the US when orphan Martin Fugate was adopted into a Kentucky family in Troublesome Creek in 1820s. What a name, Troublesome Creek.
I know. Troublesome Creek.
I love it.
Like, they were really just asking for it. Like, yeah. So, Troublesome Creek.
Yep. So he married a woman named Elizabeth Smith. The pair both had a recessive gene that led to 4 of their 7 children being born with blue skin. Back then, there were no roads. Even railroads hadn't made it to Kentucky yet, so the town you were in was basically where you stayed. So unfortunately, that led to a lot of people marrying and procreating within their own bloodline. This happened with the Fugate family, so for decades, the family carried this gene that turned them blue. So by the 1960s, members of the family had grown to hate their blue skin, and people knew that it was due to their family's history of inbreeding. So some members of the family decided to see a doctor and figure out why they were blue and how to not be blue anymore, basically. Mm-hmm. It turned out to be pretty simple. The Fugates had more blue methemoglobin in their red blood cells, turning them blue instead of the slight pink most people are.
That's crazy though, isn't it? That just you've a bit more of like something in your blood than the rest of us, so you're blue.
Yeah.
That's weird though that you don't see more blue people around. Not because, like, inbred is a big thing, but,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, because it all started... Like, it didn't start with inbreed.
Yeah.
It was because the two of them, both parents, had the recessive gene.
Yeah.
Mad.
So that's what I mean. It's mad that... Oh, yeah, I suppose unless they found somebody else with the recessive gene.
Yeah, I think if...
What are the chances
But because
that,
yeah. they were all... Because they both had the gene, all their kids had the gene, so then when they had kids together
it
all
just
day...
It kept spreading. Yeah.
The problem was resolved by taking a pill regularly to keep the blueness from returning. Benjamin Benji Stacy was born in 1975. Nurses and doctors were shocked and confused. Rather than coming out a bright shade of crimson like most babies, Benji was born with dark blue skin. Doctors were so worried by this alien skin colour that they called an ambulance to take Benji the 116 miles from his hometown outside Hazard, Kentucky to the University of Kentucky Medical Center. When he was 7, Benji's colouring had become more pink and the blue colouring in his skin slowly faded. He was the last of the Fugates to have this blue gene. However, the tint still comes out in their skin when they are cold or flush with anger.
There we go. That's so crazy. If you ever see somebody get angry and start turning blue, you know who they're related to.
Imagine like getting with somebody though and them not telling you that their family used to be blue. And then like they got angry.
I was gonna say taking that song to a whole new level.
But imagine then they got angry and their whole face turned blue. Like you'd be calling an ambulance. Yeah. You'd be like, what?
They're suffocating. They're dying. Next, we're gonna get into more urban legend type things to do with Appalachia. And the biggest one, which I'm so excited to talk about. When Becca suggested to do Appalachia, I was like, we need to talk about Bigfoot. And that's what we're going to do right now, and I'm pumped. So, Bigfoot is also commonly referred to as Sasquatch, and it's a large and hairy human-like mythical creature, alleged by some to inhabit forests in North America, particularly in the Appalachians. So, Bigfoot is described as a large, muscular human or ape-like creature covered in black, dark brown, or dark reddish hair, and he's described as being between 6 to 9 feet, which is 1.8 to 2.7 meters, with broad shoulders, no visible neck, and long arms. In 1971, multiple people in the Dallas, Oregon, filed a police report describing an overgrown ape, and one of the men claimed to have sighted the creature in the scope of his rifle but could not bring himself to shoot it because it looked more human than animal. Some people who have had alleged nighttime sightings of Bigfoot describe his eyes as glowing yellow or red. Some researchers believe that Bigfoot throws rocks to display his territory or to communicate. Others have alleged that Bigfoot makes teepees-like nests from trees, etc. And apparently nests like this have been found in different parts of Appalachia. Bigfoot has also been accused of claiming gifts from humans, such as food and jewelry, and leaving behind twigs in their place.
Little thieves. Like, imagine just stealing someone's shit and just throwing a lot. Like, they knew what they were doing because they were putting shit in its place.
Yeah. Be like, give me that, here's a stick instead. I mean, look, at least it was trying to give you something back in return, I suppose.
Yeah, it's trade.
It's a trade. So the noises people claim to have heard from Bigfoot are howls, screams, moans, grunts, whistles, and some even reported an unknown language. Navy cryptologic linguist Scott Nelson analyzed audio recordings from the early 1970s, said to be recorded in the Sierra Nevada mountains, dubbed the Sierra Sounds, and stated, it is definitely a language, it is definitely not human in origin, and it could not have been faked. In 1971, in Arkansas, a family reported being startled by a large hair-covered creature after a woman reached out the window. Apparently this caused hysteria in the area and even inspired the horror film The Legend of Boggy Creek. However, the whole thing turned out to be a hoax. And in 1924, apparently a man named Albert Osman stated he had been kidnapped and held captive by a family of Bigfoot for 6 days.
I don't believe that for a second.
No.
I like to think Bigfoot is real, but I like to think a lot of things are real. Just because it's fun. Like, there's no other purpose bar the fact that it's fun. I think it's fun. It's a fun little idea. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't even want to think about the logic behind it because I just like...
No, it's just fun. But sometimes people take it too far because I've heard stuff about, like, that Bigfoot can teleport and things like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is where we're taking it too far. Can we just leave it that maybe there is some creature, some prehistoric creature that's part of our... evolution cycle that never fully evolved into humans, like a descendant of,
like, the missing link or something.
Exactly, that could have potentially lived in these caves underground, because we all know Appalachia now is full of them.
Yeah.
And then lives there and emerges, and obviously I doubt we've explored every inch of those caves.
Oh, I highly doubt it.
I mean, like, if they go that far,
like, they cover so much ground as well. Like, I think it would take thousands of years to cover it, like, all every of it.
Like, stuff that have been evolving literally since before trees existed.
Yeah.
So, I like to think about it that way, from that point of view. I'm not saying I necessarily believe it's real or not, but I like
to think that there is stuff out there that's just...
That we can't explain.
That we can't explain, yeah. So, some of the other reports of seeing Bigfoot is... something referred to now as the Freeman footage, which was taken in 1994. A forest ranger named Paul Freeman allegedly encountered a Bigfoot in the Blue Mountains in Oregon. It has been under constant scrutiny, and the authenticity of it is often debated. You can actually see it online. Apparently, this wasn't Freeman's first rodeo either. Apparently, he had been reporting seeing a Bigfoot in the 80s as well. So a lot of people are like, this fella seems to encounter a lot of them, considering hundreds of millions and billions of people have never seen one.
Yeah.
He seems to fucking run into them a lot. You can see the footage online. It's really old, so it's not really much to go off. But some people like held onto it for dear life and was like, this is proof. And some people are like, what does that
prove?
Could
be a man in a monkey suit.
In 1996, Laurie Pate was on a camping trip near Washington State where she videotaped a dark subject she reported was running across a field. She suspected it to be a Bigfoot and obviously shared it with other people. To this day, it's called the Memorial Day Bigfoot footage. I guess it was Memorial Day. It's actually been featured in documentaries, one of them being called Sasquatch. It's also mentioned in a few books as well. Mm-hmm. Another one was in 2018. Bigfoot researcher Claudia Ackley garnered international attention after filing a lawsuit with California Department of Fish and Wildlife for failing to acknowledge the existence of Bigfoot.
I like her.
Ackley claimed to have encountered and filmed a Bigfoot in the San Bernardino Mountains in 2017, describing what she saw as a Neanderthal man with a lot of hair. That explains a lot of people.
Yeah, that's also true.
Ackley contacted emergency services as well as the CDFW. A state investigator concluded that she encountered a bear.
Oh my god.
Until her death in 2023, Ackley also ran an online support group for individuals claiming to experience psychological trauma as a result of alleged Bigfoot encounters.
So clearly she's so believed. Like clearly they were like, it's a bear. And she's like, it's not a fucking bear. I'm going to start a whole bleeding
support group.
I know I said this with the alien one, right? And I'm going to say it again, because even with this as well, I always feel so bad. Because there could be people that maybe did see Bigfoot, but no one fucking believes them.
No one believes them, yeah.
What do you do? Imagine you came across Bigfoot. Who are you going to go to for help?
Nobody. I'd probably call you before I call anybody else.
Oh, you call and say, there's a bear.
There's a very strange thing.
And then they'll see there's a Bigfoot.
Yeah.
In October 2023, a woman named Shannon Parker uploaded a video of an alleged Bigfoot to Facebook. The footage went viral on social media and was shared via various news publications. Shannon reported that she and others observed the subject while riding a train to the Durango and Silverton Narrow Gauge Railroad in the San Juan Mountains in Colorado. The authenticity of the video was debated across social media, and skeptics on Reddit speculated it was a publicity hoax perpetrated by an RV company located in the area. The company is called Sasquatch Expedition Campers, but obviously they denied the allegations. But that's what people kind of think.
Considering their name, like, that would make sense if they would do something like that. Like, let's be honest, that would 100% make sense. I want to see this video, though, because I haven't seen it.
I'm always skeptical, especially in this day and age, the social media age. Like, everyone's editing the videos all the time. Like, so, like, I'm just not convinced by video footage. And then if it's older video footage, I'm like, it's so fucking grainy, you can't tell what it is anyway. So show me a video of something, I'm not going to believe it either way.
Yeah, I feel like...
I think you need to, like, see something in real life.
I think I am a see it to believe it kind of person.
It is sad, though. It is sad because, like, I remember, like, growing up, you know, you'd see a photo of a ghost in a newspaper or something.
Yeah, and you'd be like, oh my god,
it's real. But like nowadays with how easy it is, like I could bleed and create all types of ghosts, Bigfoot, anything you need and more on my phone. You know what I mean? Anyone can do it.
I hate grown up.
I did photography and I took pictures and I was like, oh my god, I've captured orbs. It's dust. It's literally dust refracting the light.
That's true.
It.
I do think orbs are a thing as well though.
I've seen some orbs in specific places.
Yeah, they're like, I have seen some mad stories with orbs. But yeah, if you're just taking, like, if I just took a photo of my room and seen little things, like, I'd be like, that's dust.
Better clean the lens.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. In 1958, Jerry Crew, a bulldozer operator, discovered a set of large human-like footprints in California. The footprints were roughly 16 inches or 410 millimeters. 41 centimeters.
Okay, I was like, 41 centimeters, big feet.
Yeah.
I mean, big foot.
That's kind of the idea. Yeah.
Co-workers of Jerry admitted he wasn't the first one to witness something like this. Apparently there had been similar tracks on different job sites, with one of them even having an oil drum move on its own. Oil drums are heavy, like 200 kilograms of oil doesn't move on its own.
No.
A logging company started using the term Bigfoot when referring to these sightings, so when they called the Humboldt Times to report it, that's what they referred to it as. The story spread rapidly and was printed in major newspapers like the New York Times and the LA Times. So the name spread fast and clearly stuck, and Willow Creek has been known as the Bigfoot capital of the world ever since. No one really knows when Bigfoot originated. Some believe that it was originally a piece of folklore from the Native Americans. Some people believe that Bigfoot is a paranormal creature. There are rumours that they are aliens, psychics, shapeshifters, supernatural, and even time travellers. Of course, with every conspiracy theory, the government has to be involved somewhere. Some people really believe that Bigfoot is associated with some type of government cover-up.
Man, I wish that some of the shit about the government that people say was true. Because imagine the government were actually dressing men up or creating these creatures in a lab and just setting them free. Like,
yeah.
I wish that was true.
The government are not that interesting.
No.
They're too busy trying to destroy our cultures.
They're sitting in the offices figuring out how to charge us more for shit.
Yeah.
I don't think they have the time to be creating Bigfoot.
No,
they're not creative enough to think of these things.
I don't think so, no.
There have been over 10,000 reports of Bigfoot in the US, and a third of the claims have been in the Pacific Northwest. Most are considered hoaxes, even by Bigfoot believers and enthusiasts. There are other creatures similar to Bigfoot whose origins trace back to Appalachia, such as the Mothman and the Flatwoods Monster. So the Mothman, if you're not aware, is a man-sized bird with glowing red eyes. The creature was also described as slender, muscular, and around 7 feet tall with white wings. And then the Flatwoods Monster is a tall, man-like figure with a round, red face who wore a pointed hood. That just sounds like someone in the pub.
It's actually really funny. There's some drawings of it. We'll post it on the Instagram. Like, there's some,
I've never heard of
it. It's so cute, man. If one of them walked up to me, I'd be like, aha.
Skinwalkers have been popping up on TikTok for the last while, which is one of the things that inspired this episode. The legend of skinwalkers originated from Navajo folklore, and they're described as malevolent witches capable of transforming into, possessing, or disguising themselves as an animal. Different Native American tribes have called them different things over the years, but the most common has been skinwalkers. The whole idea behind skinwalkers is if you commit an outrageous act like killing a family member, you'll gain supernatural powers allowing you to shapeshift from human form into an animal at will. In Navajo society, skinwalkers are blamed for pretty much everything. Crop failures, bad marriages, sickness, and even death. Pretty much anything bad was just blamed on skinwalkers. It's said that skinwalkers wear the skin of an animal they want to take the form of, and the animal will depend on the task that they want to perform. So for example, they become a bear if they need the strength. Apparently, skinwalkers could also read minds and control animals. And to tell if you're in the presence of a skinwalker, you need to shine a light on one when they're in animal form, and if their eyes glow red, they are a skinwalker. In human form, their eyes seem animal-like. To get rid of a skinwalker, you need a powerful shaman who knows the right spells and incantations to get the skinwalker to turn on itself. I love this, it's like a little how-to guide. How to deal with skinwalkers.
There might be people in Appalachia listening to this. It might be helpful.
Advice, yeah. But yeah, so another way to kill a skinwalker is to shoot it with bullets dipped in white ash. but they must be hit in the hand or neck. Skinwalkers were once healers who were corrupted by power and turned evil. Comparisons have been made with Sith Lords from Star Wars.
I've never seen Star Wars, but no. People who have might be able to make a connection.
I'm just thinking Animagus from Harry Potter. Sirius Black and McGonagall.
Yeah.
It's like they shapeshift into animals.
Yeah, same thing. So Terry Sherman and his wife Gwen moved to a cattle ranch in Utah. However, only 18 months later, he sold the 512-acre piece of land away due to strange occurrences happening to him and his family. They had witnessed crop circles, UFOs, and repeated mutilation of the cattle in the ranch. In 1996, they sold the ranch to a billionaire named Robert Bigelow, who was interested in paranormal activities. He set up the National Institute for Discovery Science, or NIDS, to investigate the paranormal incidents occurring there. He set up round-the-clock surveillance on the ranch, hoping to get to the bottom of the paranormal claims, but they were unable to capture any meaningful physical evidence supporting the Shermans' incredible stories.
That's so disappointing.
Yeah, imagine, like, buying a ranch because they had a load of spooky shit going on, and it's like, yeah, nothing's happening.
That family was full of shit.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie.
The ranch has become famous for paranormal and UFO related activities, spurring substantial intrigue, skepticism, and various investigations, becoming a focal point for researchers and enthusiasts of the unexplained. Skeptics say that there is no hard evidence of anything unusual happening at Skinwalker Ranch. However, a biochemist who was part of the investigation team in 1997 claimed to see a humanoid creature in a tree staring down at the team. He fired at the creature with a rifle and it disappeared. It was then that he noticed it had left a single large print in the snow with two sharp claws.
That's weird.
Yeah. And I don't really understand, like, I understand why it's like a paranormal site, but I don't know why it's called Skinwalker Ranch.
Because of the skinwalkers?
Nobody really seen a skinwalker, though. Like, they said that there was crop circles, UFOs, and the cattle had been mutilated. And then one person seen something in a tree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's been so many, like,
marketing.
Yeah,
I'd say so. Probably
marketing.
Has a more creepy name or something, I'd say.
Yeah. There's so many areas in the Appalachians where, like, skinwalkers have been supposedly sighted.
Mm-hmm. It's a whole thing,
you think there's a place that's had more than one. There have been multiple books published and TV shows made about Skinwalker Ranch because no one really knows what happened or if anything did. There are also multiple theories that if you hear your name being called in the Appalachians, you should ignore it because it's a skinwalker trying to lure you out of your home.
I wouldn't listen anyway. If you called my name, I'd be like, who the fuck's saying me?
Yeah, apparently it's like...
Unless you call him Briggsy, I'm not going to answer.
Yeah. But that's how I, like, found out about so much creepy shit going on in the Appalachians because I seen a TikTok and people were like, it was like, you don't hear it. And it was all these people, like, locking up their doors and their windows that live
and
in,
like,
the Appalachians.
And, like, closing their blinds and stuff. I've seen that as well. Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck is, like, what do you mean you don't hear it? And I looked into it and it turned out that it's because apparently loads of people say that, like, that live up there or that have travelled there say that, like, they hear their name being screamed from a distance, especially at night time.
Ew.
Or, like, somebody so screaming for help. Or something, and there's never anybody there.
I've also heard stuff as well where they are able to, like, mimic family members' voices, so it'll sound like it's somebody you know calling you or screaming for help or something. And
there was I'm even safer then. I don't even talk to my family. John and Lucy Bell moved with their kids from North Carolina to Adams, Tennessee in 1817, back when it wasn't even called Adams yet. One day, John Bell stumbled upon a freaky creature that people said looked like a dog with a rabbit's head.
What?
Dog with long ears? I can't even imagine that.
I don't know, I can't either.
I think this was back as well before, like, all these mixed breeds where, like, dogs were...
A thing.
Yeah.
Like, really, really tiny with...
Like, there wasn't many...
Big, long ears. Like, it wasn't, like, really a thing.
Yeah. So after that, weird stuff started happening to the Bell family. they'd heard knocking outside their house all the time, especially at night, but whenever they checked, they couldn't find anyone. The Bell kids even had their blankets and pillows thrown around for no reason. Things got really crazy when the ghost, or whatever it was, started talking, sounding like an old lady whispering.
Ugh. Ew, ew, ew. No, thank you.
The hauntings got worse, especially for Belle's daughter. She'd have her hair pulled, get hurt, and find wet handprints after the spooky events. When the Bells told their neighbour, James Johnston, about it, the ghost started messing with him too. It even haunted some big shots like Andrew Jackson and his crew when they came to visit. 3 years after it all started, John Bell died, and then the haunting stopped. But people say the ghost came back a bunch of times, and now you can go check out the Bell Witch Cave in Adams, Tennessee, where they say you can still see evidence of the haunting. Mm. This whole thing inspired a bunch of scary movies and TV shows like The Blair Witch Project and Bell Witch Hauntings, and lots of books and other stuff too.
Cool. I wonder what evidence there is, like what's left there.
Yeah, like what's in the cave?
Don't know.
Will we see the dog with the rabbit head or... What is there? What is in the cave?
What's in the cave?
What's in the cave?
We need to know.
Girls, we need to go to the cave.
Yeah, so trip to Tennessee then, yeah?
Tune in next week. I'm only joking. We wish.
We wish.
Well, if anyone wants to...
We'll save up for 10 years and then go to Tennessee.
If anyone wants to sponsor us going to Tennessee.
Yeah, let's just finance like a whole like spooky tour of the US.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to finance that trip, like... We'll be grateful.
We'll record it.
We will. Start a GoFundMe.
Yeah, literally.
Insane Investigations team on tour.
Yeah. Oh my god, that would be a dream. Yeah. Maybe one day. So, back in the summer of 1891, there was a train heading to Asheville. But something tragic happened. Near the Bastion Bridge in Statesville, North Carolina, the train derailed and fell into a nearby creek. Sadly, 22 passengers drowned, and to this day, we still don't know exactly what happened or why it crashed. So, fast forward 50 years from that terrible day, a woman had car trouble near the same bridge. As she waited for help, she heard what sounded like a train rushing through the trees. Then, just like before, it plunged into the creek.
Chills.
But it gets even stranger than that. Nearly 70 years later, people were still talking about the train accident, and some amateur ghost hunters decided to check out the bridge, hoping to solve the mystery. One night at around 3 a.m, the same time the ghost train was first seen, they heard a train coming. Convinced it was the ghost train, they stayed on the tracks. But it wasn't a ghost at all. It was a real train, and tragically, one of the hunters was killed and two others were hurt.
So sad.
So sad, but also you stood on train tracks and you're hearing a train coming, so...
That's freaky though. Like, it's freaky. The weirdest thing about that isn't even the whole kind of like paranormal, spooky, ghost train. It's more so just the fact of like the coincidence.
Yeah.
Of so much tragedy happening at the same track.
The same track, yeah. Mm. So there's actually a lot of really strange superstitions across the Appalachians. So I just made a little list of them to read out because I thought some of them were interesting. So the first one is never close a knife you didn't open or you'll have bad luck for 7 years. So, like, you know them butterfly knives that fold up? If one of them is open...
Switchblade.
Yeah, switchblade. If you fold it up... Or a pocket knife. And you were the one that opened it, yeah.
All three terms.
Another one is keep a penny in your washer. What? I thought that was so weird, leaving a penny in your washing machine. That's going to be so noisy. It's just going to go ding, ding, ding,
all
ding.
All the way around, all off, yeah. Ding.
That's going to be really irritating. Don't wash your clothes on New Year's Day or you'll wash a family member out.
I think I might have heard that.
That one's deep.
That one, yeah, that's a bit heavy.
The next one is a typical one I think everybody's heard of. Don't walk under a ladder. If you find yourself under one, don't turn around, walk backwards.
I didn't know about turning around.
Backwards.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. Going.
It's the same with, do you know the Four Shores?
Oh yeah, never jump along the foreshores.
Never walk across, them all. I'm not, I am a superstitious person, but I don't believe the foreshore thing, but it's bet into me.
I don't know the foreshores.
So I think it's an Irish thing.
You know the way you have little shores, the little rectangle things on the ground? If there's four of them in a row, if you walk across it, you'll have bad luck. You need to walk backwards across it.
Foreshores on the ground?
Yeah, you know, like the little...
The metal grates.
Metal grates.
Like, do you know what they are? They're like the aircon ones. They're not actual shores. They're not shores. They're not like drainage.
The distribution points of the broadband network.
Yeah, probably. In the ground.
Considering we work for a broadband company.
I forgot. That was a long time ago. Okay.
It's a long time.
But yeah, apparently if you walk across four of them, you'll have bad luck. You need to walk backwards across them.
Okay, I don't believe the internet companies can
just air con the human. Or do you ever hear the other thing? It's like if you step on a crack, you break your mother's back.
Yeah, I've heard that one.
Did you never hear that?
No.
I thought that was like proper Irish thing.
Oh, I've heard it mostly on like American TV.
Really?
Yeah.
Never heard like, that one.
When you're walking just up the road or something, it's like step on a crack and you'll break your mother's back and all.
I knew, I heard that it was bad luck, but I didn't know that you'll break your mother's back.
Yeah. That's mad.
Don't let anybody sweep under your feet is another one.
How can...
Do you know, like, if you're sweeping and somebody's feet's in the way and you're either nice and you say, excuse me, or you're like me and you start tapping them on the foot with the sweeping brush until they lift their feet up.
Okay.
Apparently you shouldn't let people do that.
Fair enough.
If a bad storm is coming, put a two-edged axe into a stump facing the storm to ensure the storm goes around you.
Hmm.
That's another one. I feel like that's one that could be disproved very easily.
Yeah, true.
Don't cut your baby's hair before their first birthday. That's one I never heard before either. Don't let a pregnant woman see a dead person or the baby will have a birthmark.
I'm pretty sure my mom didn't let me see any dead people when she was pregnant and I have birthmarks.
I have birthmarks. My sister does, but my mom's seen a dead person with my sister. I don't know if she did when I was. And she's pregnant with me.
Just glaze over that, my mom's seen a dead person.
Well, she was like, it wasn't like she just seen a dead person on the street. She went to a funeral and seen a dead person.
Okay.
Hold your breath when you pass a cemetery or you'll be next to die.
Let's hope the cemetery is quite small.
Well, I haven't died yet, and I breathe walking past a cemetery once a week.
I did a photo shoot in a cemetery.
Yeah. There's a cemetery at the end of the road. I have to walk past it to get anywhere. So yeah. I'll start holding my breath, but... If you're walking with someone, you have to go on the same side of a post or obstacle, or it'll break your friendship. I did hear that one before.
Oh, no way. No, yeah. I never heard that.
I did hear that one.
Stephen Stainer was a child who got kidnapped and held captive by a man named Kenneth Parnell in California. He stayed with Parnell for 7 years.
That is insane.
Yeah.
Madness. When Stephen was 14, Parnell made him help kidnap another boy, Timothy White, who was only 5 years old. But Stephen managed to escape with Timothy, which was a brave thing to do. Yeah. Parnell got caught because of what Stephen did.
Fair
Good
play
on
to
you, Stephen.
Literally.
Stephen's older brother, Carey, felt jealous because Stephen got a lot of attention from the media and their parents. What a weird thing to be jealous of.
Yeah, literally, I was just thinking that.
I'm jealous of my brother for getting attention after he was kidnapped for seven years.
Yeah.
Sadly, Stephen died in a motorcycle accident in 1989. 8 years later, Carey did something terrible. He worked at a motel near Yosemite National Park, and some awful murders happened there. My friends were in Yosemite when they went travelling across America. Amy and Toby. Hey, Amy and Toby, love you. Glad you didn't get kidnapped in Yosemite. So anyway, what happened was three people disappeared from the motel in 1999. Carey admitted he killed them after he tricked them into letting him into their room. The police found two bodies in a burned car and got a letter about where to find the third victim. He also killed a woman in the park and got caught because of evidence that he had left behind. When the police asked Carey about it, Carey confessed. Carey said he couldn't control himself. He admitted he had thoughts of hurting women for a long time. He didn't want to stop until he got caught. During the trial, Carey's lawyers said he had problems from his past, but the court still found him guilty and sentenced him to death. Today, Carey Stainer remains on death row at San Quentin State Prison, just outside of San Francisco. Due to a court ruling on capital punishment, there have been no executions in the state of California since 2006. However, Stainer is not eligible for parole.
Good. I hope it stays that way.
Mm.
So, next we are going to talk about a man called Gary Hilton. So, Gary was born on November 26, 1946 in Atlanta, Georgia. He joined the army when he was young and was a good paratrooper until he had some mental health issues and got discharged in 1967. After that, he got married and divorced 3 times and started getting into trouble with the law. He started acting really strange, pulling out his own teeth with pliers, which obviously scared the shit out of people, as it would. And people who knew him noticed the change from him being a friendly guy to something much, much darker. He even threatened to kill someone and was seen walking around with a knife. But it wasn't just these odd behaviours. He was arrested multiple times for things like drunk driving, carrying a gun without a licence, drug possession, and solicitation. Then things got much worse. He killed an elderly couple, John and Irene Bryant, in Pisgah National Forest in North Carolina in 2007. He also murdered a woman named Cheryl Dunlap in Florida's Appalachia National Forest the same year. Later, he killed Meredith Emerson on Georgia's Blood Mountain on New Year's Day 2008. Authorities started suspecting him when they found Emerson's body, and a former cop mentioned seeing someone like him near the scene. Hilton confessed to killing Emerson and told him where to find her body. He was convicted of all those murders and is currently on death row in Florida. Investigators also think he might be responsible for other unsolved murders, including Judy Smith, Jason Knapp, Rosanna Miliani, and Michael Scott Lewis. There are similarities between these cases and Hilton's known crimes.
Well, I don't think there was enough similarities to be able to convict him on it, but it's kind of assumed that
most likely it was him.
It was him. The last kind of true crime case we're going to cover is Harold Henthorne. Harold and his wife Toni appeared to have the ideal marriage. They were both successful in their careers and living in Denver to enjoy the scenic mountain views, raising a daughter together. However, their seemingly perfect life took a tragic turn in 2012 when Toni fell to her death from a cliff in Rocky Mountain National Park.
That's so sad.
Initially, Harold claimed it was a terrible accident that occurred while they were celebrating their 12th wedding anniversary with a hike. But detectives grew suspicious when they found a puzzling map in Harold's car that didn't quite align with his story. Their suspicions deepened further when they found out that Harold's first wife, Lynn, also died under suspicious circumstances in 1995.
Oh, shit.
The death occurred when the couple's Jeep fell off a jack while she was reportedly retrieving a lug nut. However, her family doubted this explanation and said that with Lynn's cautious nature and questioning, why would she attempt such a risky maneuver? In addition to that, Harold's claims about the lug nut rolling an implausible distance on the road added to their skepticism. Detectives began scrutinizing Harold's behavior and uncovered discrepancies in his accounts of Toni's fatal fall. Additionally, they learned that Harold hadn't been employed in the non-profit sector as he had claimed, but rather had been living off his first wife's life insurance payout for years.
That's us.
Despite Harold's protests of innocence, a jury found him guilty of Toni's murder and sentenced him to life in prison. Toni's family remains convinced that Harold deliberately caused her death. And I mean, I don't blame them. If more than one of your spouses die
under these weird ass circumstances,
you're definitely a murderer.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
There's not a chance.
There's no way that happens to two people. Like, to one person. Twice.
Yeah. Next, we're going to talk about Appalachia's connection to Ireland. So, let's bring it back home.
There's a lot, surprisingly.
Bring it back home.
Bringing it back home.
While Pangaea was still Pangaea, Islands shared 20,000 foot peaks with Canada, Greenland, and Portugal. Basically, Donegal was attached to Newfoundland in Canada.
I found that really interesting. I didn't know that at all.
It's insane, yeah.
I know, like, some bits, when you look at the continents, you can kind of see where they fit together, like Africa. And, like, South America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. It's mad to think that, like, Northern Ireland was just attached to Canada. Like, that's weird.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why so many Irish people moved to Canada.
Maybe.
Spiritually connected, because we were once the same.
We were once together.
Despite the separation of the continents, there are local mountains that are still technically part of the Appalachians. In 2013, the parts of the Appalachians that remain in Ireland were mapped out and measured to be 279 miles or 449 kilometres. The area has since been called Ireland's own stretch of the Appalachian Trail. In 2021, the route got a much needed upgrade. While the trail was walkable in 2013, there were long stretches on back roads, wet sections off-road, and no continuous markings.
Apparently now it's all just set up that you can just go and walk it.
That'd be so cool. We should go. See if we can spot some freaky ass shit. So some of the Irish sites that are included in the trail is Slieve League Cliffs in County Donegal, Cliffs of Silver Strand in Mahara, a chunk of the Gaeltacht,
which, if people don't know, it's an area of Ireland that they speak fluently in Irish. They don't really speak English.
Bluesack Mountains in County Donegal, Kelly's Bridge in Donegal, Sparrow Mountains in Tyrone and Derry, Musselden Temple in Derry, Dunluce Castle in County Antrim, Giant's Causeway in County Antrim, and Carrickaread Rope Bridge in County Antrim. As we said earlier, Ireland wasn't just a part of the Appalachians during Pangaea, but many Irish people emigrated to the Appalachian area in the 18th century. So an awful lot of culture and folklore we grew up with in Ireland is similar to the folklore and culture in parts of Appalachia. So for example, moonshine is called putchin over here and it means little pot.
I thought that was hilarious.
It has been around since the first century and was made illegal by English landowners in 1661. It's thought that Irish people began making this after moving to Appalachia and it became moonshine. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Of course we'd bring the alcohol.
Yeah.
The folklore of the region also shares characteristics with Celtic folklore. There's a lot of supernatural in Irish folklore, such as the Banshee, and the Banshee actually shows up in Appalachian tales as well. Apparently as well, being really good at storytelling is a trait common to both Appalachian and Celtic folk. Several Appalachian food staples like buttermilk and potatoes also originated with the Scots-Irish immigrants. Even aspects of the Appalachian language, like pronouncing pen and pin the same way and referring to valleys as bottoms, are remnants of Scots-Irish dialect. Anyone familiar with Irish trad can also hear its influence in bluegrass music. It can actually sound very, very similar. It's not just the presence of fiddles and whistles, but the quick, reel-like tempos and improvisation of harmonies. In addition to bluegrass, Appalachian music is also known for its ballads, which all the Irish trad music is ballads. Apparently even some of the dialect is very similar. So, like, do you know the way we don't pronounce, like, ing, we're like, for fixing, we say fixing.
Yeah.
That in areas of Appalachia they'd kind of say it the same.
They drop the G.
The same with salad. Salad. A lot of, like, Dublin people say, like, oh, salad.
Salad.
Instead of salad. And like to, like, I would like to. Would you like to? Like to.
Yeah.
So, like, they kind of, like, mash some of the same words together and just knock off syllables wherever we do as well. There's also a supernatural shapeshifter whose origins are in Ireland called Pooka, and they're very, very similar to skinwalkers, which we're going to get into on our Irish folklore episode, which is coming very, very soon. But that's it for the Appalachian Mountains.
Another long one, but a good one.
I think so too.
Something different, something a bit more lighthearted, urban legends and stuff, only a little bit. We had to add in a little bit of true crime. there was more true crime cases that's happened because of it's like a massive plot of like the US, so there's been loads of crime, but I tried to cover the ones that were kind of more related to the area, like the National Forest Killer and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we hope you enjoyed something a little bit more lighthearted than usual.
Bye! Bye.